a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Senate State Affairs have come to order. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Adelstein, Cutler, Frerichs.
Aye, here.
Gray.
Here.
Johnston.
Aye.
Rave.
Here.
Teason.
Here.
Olson. Roden.
Here. Quorum is present. You've received the minutes. Comments, corrections, action. Move by Rave, second by Teason. Approval of the minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. Before we get started today, just a couple announcements. If you want to testify, we'd ask you to sign the podium by the front door. Also, you might want to check your cell phones, make sure they're in appropriate setting. Also, as a reminder to the committee, you should have received an email reminder that at the end of today's meeting, we are going to take up discussion on ideas for summer studies. So if you have something in mind, keep that, and we'll discuss it toward the end of the meeting. Why don't we have the pages come up to a microphone, and you can just introduce yourselves. Tell us where you're from, where you're headed.
I'm Nick Reagan from Rapid City, and I plan on going to some in-state school for college next year.
My name's Sean Day. I'm from Cologne, and next year I plan to attend SDSU to major in pharmacy and minor in business.
Thank you. From Cologne. Do they? Well, I will reserve comment on Cologne. There was some old history with the legislature in Cologne. Well, I'll tell you about it later. Any other announcements before we get started today? Seeing none, we will take up then House Bill 1093, an act to revise certain property tax levies for the general fund of a school district. House Bill 1093 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony. The prime sponsor, who is Senator Russ Olson, is not here, but I will open it up to Senator Gray for comment.
Mr. Chairman, this is the one of the Cutler-Gabriel adjustment bills. At this time, I just ask the committee to pass the bill, move it forward, and ultimately, there's other bills out there too. We'll get the right numbers and probably send this or another bill to conference committee and ultimately pass one of them.
Okay, thank you, Senator Gray. And like we discussed earlier, I don't know what the outcome of this will be because there are a number of vehicle bills, but it certainly is no harm in moving it forward and keeping it as a placeholder. So, are there any other proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents? Seeing none, anybody have any questions on 1093? Seeing no questions, I will open to committee discussion and or action. Senator Gray.
I move to pass on House Bill 1093.
Second. Motion by Gray, second by Johnson. Do pass on 1093. Any additional comments, Senator Gray?
Yeah, one other comment. I think just as a reminder to the committee, let's make sure we get this amended on the floor before we just make sure it actually passes and it becomes law. So we just have an amendment ready for the floor.
That's right. And also, as just a point of information, the governor had a levy bill, which was also a kind of a new situation this year. And this year is also last year and this year were a unique year in that it'll be the first time in the last 15 years that the mill levies will actually slated to go up. And so obviously House Bill 1093 won't be able to stand the way it is. And the governor's mill levy bill, I believe that they entered the numbers with what they believe to be the correct numbers early on. So if that indeed is the case, then 1093 will go by the wayside. For now, we'll move it forward. Any other comments? Seeing none, the motion then is do pass on House Bill 1093. All those in favor vote aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Frerichs?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
And Roden?
Aye.
Motion passed.
Motion carries. House Bill 1093 goes to the floor. Do pass. Move now to House Bill 1220, an act to conditionally repeal certain provisions establishing a network adequacy studies, quality assessments, improvement requirements, utilization review, and benefit determination requirements and grievance procedures for managed health care plans and certain standards for managed health care plans of the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act is found to be unconstitutional. House Bill 1220 is now open for public hearing and proponent testimony. I believe the bill is shorter than the title. Actually, it is.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the Senate State Affairs Committee. I'm Brian Gosch, State Representative, District 32, Rapid City. This might be one of the few times you see a bill which length is the same as the title. I thought you did a good job reading that title, and the title pretty much explains what the bill is. House Bill 1220 is brought to you today in consideration of what will be happening in March and June of this year regarding the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. On March 26th through 28th of this year, the United States Supreme Court will be hearing oral arguments regarding several issues on this act, two of which are whether the minimum coverage provision is constitutional and whether the provisions of the act are severable. The court is expected to make a decision in June of this year after setting aside those 3 days to hear the case. The case is Florida versus the United States Department of Health. South Dakota joined Florida and many other states in this lawsuit. On January 31st, 2011, the Federal District Court ruled that the individual mandate to purchase insurance exceeded Congress's authority to regulate interstate commerce. And since there was no severability clause in the act, the whole law was determined to be invalid. On appeal to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, that court ruled on August 12, 2011, that the mandate was unconstitutional, but held that the unconstitutional parts could be severed, allowing the remaining parts of the act to stay in place. The Supreme Court of the United States, like I said, will soon decide which of those courts is correct. If the Supreme Court agrees with the District Court, then there will be no need for those parts of last year's Senate Bill 38 that dealt with PPACA, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. In the event House Bill 1220, House Bill 1220 would repeal what we passed last year in Senate Bill 38. If the United States Supreme Court either agrees with the 11th Circuit or rules that the PPACA is completely constitutional, then we would need Senate Bill 38 in place to be in minimum compliance with the federal law. Senate Bill 38 from last year did a few things. One, it defined adverse benefit determination, and associated with that, it also reduced regulation by removing a second appeal within the insurance company, but preserving one internal appeal and one external appeal. It also reorganized the chapters for ease of understanding and to mirror federal structure. There were some things in there that we also had to do we didn't like, but it was in there, for example, the requirement that materials be provided in bilingual format. Passing House Bill 1220 would put a suicide clause in Senate Bill 38 from last year, making it consistent with the suicide clause that we already put in Senate Bill 43 from last year. Although a lot of Senate Bill 38 from last year had nothing or little to do with PPACA, people in South Dakota have shown resistance to acceptance of Senate Bill 38 from last year because it is somewhat tied to PPACA. Thus, House Bill 1220 was brought to repeal it in the event we don't have to implement it. With that, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll turn it over to further proponents. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Randy Moses, Division of Insurance, Department of Labor and Regulation. We support this piece of legislation. I think Representative Gosch did an outstanding job of laying out the framework on this. We 38, the bill that would be repealed if PAC is determined to be unconstitutional. That would allow us to basically start over again with our managed care provisions, and in that event, we would be able to start fresh without that federal hammer hanging over our head and decide what's the appropriate managed care provisions for South Dakota. If, in fact, as the representative indicated, is not declared unconstitutional in its entirety, it preserves Senate Bill 38, which keeps us in minimal federal compliance and allows us to keep the feds out of regulating health insurance in South Dakota. So for those reasons, we're in support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moses. Further proponents? Any other proponents? Seeing none, are there opponents? House Bill 1220. Any opponents? Seeing none, seeing no opponents, we'll waive rebuttal and move to questions from the committee. Any questions? Seeing none, we'll move to discussion and or action. Sir Gray.
Chairman, I'd move to pass.
Motion to pass, House Bill 1220 by Gray, seconded by Rave. Comments on the motion?
Senator Frerichs. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just I think this is something that we still should be a little bit cautious of. I realize there probably have been times before where we pass legislation under the condition, as you can see, as the fourth word in the title for this bill, but it still is something that we should be a little bit considerate of, because I mean, we meet each year as a legislature. We're not like North Dakota and coming back every other year. And so if there happens to be some type of changes made, why couldn't we take care of it in the next legislative session? And obviously we know that the folks in the insurance division have fairly broad rulemaking authority. So I'm going to vote against the bill today, mainly under the merits of, how are we to be able to predict what's going to turn out? I understand that this is conditional, but it still is a precedent, and it maybe has been set before, and I'll look forward to discussion about that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further discussion? Well, I would just make a few brief comments, because I think that this bill has, even today, has not gotten the attention that it maybe deserves, because we certainly, Senate Bill 38 from last year got a lot of attention, and I think that this perhaps goes a long way toward rectifying a lot of that, those perceptions or misperceptions, whatever the case may be. And so I think it does have some value in that. If nothing else, just to clarify what our intent were from last year. And I'm somewhat disappointed that this hasn't garnered more attention than it has now that we're in one of the last legs of the process. Don't share the same concerns that we're setting some kind of precedence. I think it's pretty clear that this simply repeals the act when and if the Obamacare is repealed, and why wouldn't it all be completely proper to do that? So I'd urge your support. Any other comments? Seeing none, the motion then is due pass on House Bill 1220. Those in favor vote aye. Those opposed nay. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Adelstein?
Aye.
Frerichs?
No.
Gray?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Roden?
Aye. Motion carries. House Bill 1220 goes to the Senate floor. Due pass. We will now take up House Bill 1228, an act review the sunset concerning tax refunds for new and expanded agricultural facilities and new or expanded business facilities. House Bill 1228 is now open for public hearing. Proponent testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen of the Senate State Affairs Committee. It's a pleasure to be with you. My name is Tom Hansen, the senator from District 22 in Huron, and I believe there's an amendment that has been available, which will circulate now. And the desire of the amendment is to really just change the complexion of this bill so that we can be assured that it will be kept alive. I know that there are some other amendments that will probably be offered, and it'll be your decision to decide what's to be done with those. But the important point that I think I want to impress upon you is the need for this bill to remain alive, for it to be able to be brought to the Senate floor and passed, and then end up in a conference committee. Because you know, when we talk about industrial development and the incentives to bring that type of investment into South Dakota, that's a huge issue, and there are many players involved in arriving at what would be felt to be the best conclusion. And so with that, I will stand down. I know that there are others that are going to offer some testimony, and remember, my feeling is that this piece of legislation, as simple as it is, as what you hear before you, is really very, very important, and needs to be kept alive. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Steve Willard. I'm a registered lobbyist and the executive director for South Dakota Electric Utility Companies. And I would echo Senator Hansen's comments. I think that this particular bill dovetails with some of the actions that's going on in the House right now. We have been searching all session long for an answer to the incentive issue. And I remind you, without belaboring the point, that we spent a lot of time on this in 2010. We brought a fairly significant change last year in 2011. All those cases passed the body. That issue is on the ballot for it to be determined in November. And then you're faced with a position of coming back here in 2013 on the heels of that election. I think that that uncertainty is challenging. I think that that uncertainty is negative. I think that for those individuals, not only in South Dakota, that want to expand and want to do some significant investments of their own, that uncertainty is a disadvantage. I think also for those gentlemen and those ladies that are working with GOED in the governor's office trying to entice corporations in a lousy corporate atmosphere across the country to come to South Dakota, that that uncertainty is a tough thing for us. You can ask the folk in Brookings about that. I also trust this process. Whatever form this bill comes out this morning, and I know there's 2-3 amendments been circulated, whatever form this process comes out, this is the process. If the Democrats and the Republicans and the governor's office and essentially the lobbyists all come to a conclusion that we've taken 1230 and we've made it better, then we go out collectively and we tell the voters that, look, we've done our job, that we've all weighed in, that we've weighed the facts, we've had the long conversations, and that's why we're here. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to revisit this issue. This is the process. To say that that essentially there's a vote coming and that we ought to just wait to see how the vote turns out, I'm not sure exactly that we all know what we're voting for. So I would encourage you to pass this bill forward in any of the amended forms that you have in front of you. I would take it in this form. I mean, a review is at least keeps the bill alive, and we've got a fairly decent root canal going on the subject in the House right now, and we'll defer to the process in your judgment. So I'd be very supportive of whatever keeping this thing alive is.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, David Owen, South Dakota Chamber of Commerce and Industry. This is an awkward situation to address using the procedures that we have here at the legislature, Mr. Chairman. I would take about 2 minutes to kind of walk through some of the substance of this whole topic, if that's allowed, or I can confine my comments to the procedure of what we do next. So if I'll take the cue from you if you want me to talk a little bit about the substance of this bill and some of the options before I know you have before you as amendments, but not moved, I would do that. If you would prefer to stay on process and whether this bill should move forward, I'll do that as well.
Well, as chair, and since we're in the third of a four-step process, I would like to start have some substantive conversation as far as ideas rather than just blindly passing forward a vehicle bill. So, yes, I would like you to talk about the options that are on the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, we have this combination to be thankful for. This is probably one of the most important bills during the session. It's a topic that has an enormous amount of interest. It's technical. It's hard to understand. It's very political and highly emotional. There's a good combination to start. What I would like to do is walk through the broadest sense of this, and what I will speak to is what Steve referred to as the root canal. Then you have shorter versions of this. But let me start here. Do we even need incentives in South Dakota? Does economic development need things like refunds and rebates and all of those types of things? And the chamber would very firmly tell you that we think it's essential. If for no other reason, then we have a tax structure that works very good for businesses once they're operating, but our tax treatment of initial capital investment puts us at a disadvantage. Why? We charge sales and use tax on all the material used in a building. We charge sales and use tax on equipment when you come to South Dakota. We're one of the very few states who does that. On top of all that, we charge a contractor's excise tax. So if you're bringing a large project, and our history is to focus this on large projects to South Dakota, we know that your tax bill is going to have a number that's going to be 5, 6, 7, 8, sometimes 15, 16, 17 million dollars. And that's an absolute, regardless of the percent of the project, that's a number that has opportunity costs that you can do more with elsewhere. So our approach has been to do refunds. The refund policy, particularly with the pipelines, came under intense scrutiny in the 2010 legislative session. And an answer, House Bill 1230, was formed in the 2011 session, where we would add flexibility. We could go to smaller projects. The process would be public. And rather than using an automatic refund, which is how we got in trouble with pipelines, we would use a selective process that says we'll give these as we choose so that we have that flexibility, and then we'll do it very publicly. That required an ongoing appropriation, which was designed to be about as much of a hit on the funding here as was as refunds were. Refunds kept money from the general fund. The ongoing appropriation was designed to take that concept and send it to the pool before the commitment could be made, which brought about the advantage of being easier to administer. You talk to anyone who's been blessed enough to qualify for this program, and they'll tell you halfway through chasing receipts all over the place, the real thrill just wasn't there. As good as we thought 1230 was in answering the criticisms to refunds, there are criticisms to 1230, and the Democratic Party put it on the ballot. So we arrive here with this thing on the ballot, and the question and the challenge is, what would be the best economic development policy we could have? If we were to sit down and start writing, what would good law look like? Good law might look like this. We're very sensitive to the fact that very, very large projects, and that's kind of a thing we need help with. Despite our best efforts, we have yet to find a title for what we call things that are beyond big. We take wind. We'll take an environmental project that are so far, they're up above $50 million. They're so far above what we've talked about in terms of large projects. And wind particularly needs assurance. They want to see in statute that they can get a refund here because they've got a lot of places they can go. So the broadest concept is go back to a rebate, but don't base it on receipts. Base it on other things. But make sure we use their tax money to rebate back about half. So that sits there. Plus the other thing is you get a good wind proposal in any given year, your fund's gone. So protect the fund, assure the client, so we have something for the very large, and so that's where we get to rebates based on kilowatt hours and other things. The criticism is too much money from the general fund, and we need money to education. Well, if you don't have to worry about feeding a huge proposal, you can take the skim from 22% of the contractor's excise tax down to 18%. That's a 20% reduction. That leaves multiple millions of dollars available for whatever the legislature decides to do. We build a firewall so you can't be in both programs. 1230 had clawbacks, so you give all the best of 1230. And I think we end up with a good workable project. By the way, on the what we call Uber, but on the very, very large projects, we've now created a system for you to name the projects you want. Before, it was in the negative. Everybody qualifies except this list. So what's sitting over there is a concept that says, here's what you have to do to qualify, and you have to be on this list. It'll be wind, it'll be environmental. So you can decide how you want to target that in statute. We think that's a comprehensive policy. We don't take lightly the fact that we've addressed 1230's concerns and see implementing that sooner requires taking that off the ballot and putting it back on. We're comfortable with the fact that it's enough of an improvement. You don't do that lightly. But even the people who brought it joined the discussions about achieving the right policy and embracing that policy and moving forward. So I'll leave you very comfortable that we have parts of a good discussion. We have a political environment. We encourage you to take as many of those parts as you can and move forward. However we do it, conference committee here, pass this, take parts of this, look at those amendments. I will just assure you that in substance, the chamber's fairly convinced we're going to end up here. It's a matter of whether we do it now or have an election in between. The chamber's comfortable in the election process, but I think the certainty that Steve spoke to would say if you have the opportunity to achieve good policy without that, it would be good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Julie Johnson. I have the good fortune of working for a growth initiative in Northeast South Dakota called Absolutely Aberdeen. I also represent Prairie Vision, our regional development arm, as well as the Aberdeen Development Corporation, and I would tell you all my other lobbyist badges are in my briefcase one floor down, but I do have them. I don't have them all on at the moment. My apologies for that. In the legislative off-season, I do get to work with economic development efforts of all sizes and shapes throughout our region, not just in the city of Aberdeen. We've been very fortunate to have used nearly all of the state's economic development tools to bring our region to the point where I wear this button, campaign button, proudly here at the legislature every day. 1,000-plus jobs is our workforce recruitment campaign. I'm also a bit of a resident historian, I must confess. I have been involved with nearly every of the state's economic development tools, as well as many of the federal or local economic development tools since the early 80s, and can testify from my humble opinion about how critical these tools are. I'm taking a shot at the dark because I don't know exactly what bill I'm testifying for, but let me simply try to let you know about how important these tools are, especially for projects that communities choose to embrace to grow their own economies or for those expansions from within. Those are equally valued in my book and in the world that I work and live in. Expansion from within is something we do know of a couple of projects in South Dakota, including in our region right now, that are completely on hold because this issue is on the ballot in November. And they do not have enough business certainty to confirm with their investors or their bankers that they should go forward with an investment in South Dakota until such time as this is resolved. This is a great time to do that resolution, including because the conditions under which House Bill 1230 from last year were put on the ballot are dramatically different than they were a year ago. This legislature, many of you and other committees in this building are working very hard on getting additional money to education, to K-12 education. Much of that is what put 1230 on the ballot this year. Many of you are much more expert on that than I am. But let me also then get to the point of sharing with you how important this can be in a large project. Aberdeen is a bit of a poster child in the use of the large project economic development tool in the past. Almost 4.5 years ago now, Molded Fiberglass, the wind turbine blade manufacturer, significant company, sells all of their product to GE in the wind energy industry, chose Aberdeen. That was about the same moment I was returning to my hometown to do this unusual job. At that very moment, when they picked Aberdeen, their project was going to be smaller. About 5 weeks later, when they made the official announcement to the world, the project got larger. All of a sudden, that meant that Aberdeen had to scramble to figure out how they could put the financing pieces for an even larger project together. Bear in mind also that one of the new business models is that the community or the local development corporation owns the building. Lots of companies are not situated to use their capital on real estate, but must focus their capital on their human capital or on the equipment side of their business. So they look to communities, their development corporations or the communities, to own the building or build the building for them. That is precisely what happened in the molded fiberglass case. The Aberdeen Development Corporation owns that very large building. That was a $33 million project. And you see at the top of any list on this subject the Aberdeen Development Corporation's name and about $300,000 that went back to the Development Corporation, a nonprofit entity, to reinvest in the financing package that brought molded fiberglass to South Dakota and is a very key component to the development of the wind energy industry in South Dakota. So the anatomy of a large project says, in this case, there were 19 different lenders. 19 lenders came together to do that project. It got that large, and it came down to where are the last several hundred thousand dollars going to come from. I looked at that and said, you're eligible for the large project refund, and sure enough, we verified with the Department of Revenue that that project was eligible, and that filled the gap, allowing that deal to be done, and that has been a great gift to South Dakota and the wind energy industry. So we're both the poster child for the use of this, and when communities make decisions to expand their own economies, this becomes a very important tool. So I would wrap this issue in that perspective as much as possible. That's one of the reasons why all of our local organizations have taken positions opposed to House Bill 1230, or now known as Referred Law 14, on the ballot in November. So we would humbly request you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, to do what you can using this vehicle or whatever vehicles you may have in front of you yet this last week of the legislature, to do a couple of things. To do what you can to incentivize the wind energy industry in South Dakota. We have a lot of purple in northeast South Dakota on the wind energy map. We know that wind conditions are good. If we can get these other roadblocks out of the way, we can further develop the wind energy industry in South Dakota. And that includes the wind supply chain, manufacturing, such as molded fiberglass companies. This all do what you can as well to assist our regional friends at the Big Stone Power Plant. We need that plant to be continuing to provide electricity in our part of the world and taking care of us all long term. Please do what you can also to restore business certainty to our business climate. Having Referred Law 14 on the ballot is really jams up our ability to grow our economy in the future, especially in the short term. You're already working on getting more money for education, and clearly that was one of the motivations for putting this on the ballot. And as well, please do what you can to allow companies from within to expand here and grow into the future. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll stand by for any questions you may have today or throughout the session.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Bob O'Connell representing the Sioux Falls Area Chamber of Commerce. A couple of these bills will go down to the $5 million and plus number. Not such huge projects as some of the others that you've heard about before, but what we need is certainty in the marketplace in order to attract businesses to our city. Forward Sioux Falls is an economic development combination of the Chamber and the Sioux Falls Development Foundation. That initiative works to help businesses expand in our area and brings targeted employers to our area. One, for example, is Capital One, which is bringing 200 to 400 jobs to our area. Another employer is ADP, Automatic Data Processing. That employer has brought many high-paying jobs and has paid a large amount of property and sales tax. We have targeted data processing components like ADP because we have the infrastructure for that, but we need to have availability of some funds in order to help them start in the startup mode. And this bill, one of these bills, would help us do that. The sales and use tax in that area will help fund schools, cities, and state government. Forward Sioux Falls is funding a national advertising campaign to bring in new companies from all over our country. Economic development and certainty in economic development is very important to us, and we believe that the bill, including the grant situation, would really help us, or some kind of return that we can use in order to attract these companies and to expand others. We really would appreciate your consideration in carrying this out and continuing the conversation, because it's really important to our area in order to attract businesses and expand ones in our area. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Mr. Chairman, Bill Van Camp. I'm a registered lobbyist for NextEra Energy Resources. That's the company that used to be known as Florida Power and Light. NextEra is a national leader in the development of renewable energy projects. We did the first large-scale wind project in Highmore. Most recently, we completed the Groton project, which is a 99-megawatt project, of course, near Groton, South Dakota. If you remember last year, wind energy projects and the development of those types of facilities in South Dakota has been a political football that's been tossed around for the last 5 or 6, 7 years that I can recall up here in various ways, shapes, or forms. But in the discussion last year on 1230, there was a bill running off to the side that had to do with a competitive energy task force that passed the body, and those meetings were held this summer. And I think the important distinction that I would emphasize for my client is that 1230 in its form that's gone to the ballot doesn't really aid the process of developing large-scale, or as David Owen said, Uber wind projects in the state of South Dakota. And when we talk large-scale, a 99-megawatt wind farm, you're looking at a cost of over $200 million, and there certainly are projects on the board that are in excess of that. And while 1230 may do a lot of things, taking into account the tax ramifications on the upfront financing of these facilities is something I think that 1230 doesn't do. And so all three options that are before this committee, as I understand it, and any option that's been discussed on the House side includes taking a different look at wind. And I think that if you look at the task force this summer and what they put together, I think you'll see the reason for that. I'm going to quote from that study, and it's a statement that says, South Dakota's total tax burden is materially higher than its neighbors under the current system, and even higher after the rebates expire. Now, the rebates expire at the end of this year. What is substantially higher? Again, previous proponents said that when you look at entering into business in South Dakota with a capital investment, that we have a sales use and excise tax that's a little bit higher than our neighbors. Well, for wind development, the task force found that the cost of a 200-megawatt facility in South Dakota is roughly, from an upfront tax perspective, 10 times the cost of the same facility in North Dakota. The difference is $22 million, this is after the refund expires, $22 million versus $2 million in North Dakota versus $2.8 million in Minnesota versus $3.4 million in Iowa. Under the current tax policy, with approximately a 55% rebate of costs over $40 million, the tax in South Dakota is still $12.9 million. Now, we're not here asking for parity in any of the versions that are floating around or what was passed out of committee last week in House Commerce. We're asking that we hold the line. We're asking that we keep South Dakota in the place that it is now, with the understanding, as the task force found, that there are a number of other factors that go into whether or not you site a wind facility. But I think we've taken a monumental step forward from 2010, when, if some of you will remember, the debate was that wind facilities are no different than the pipeline because we're going to come here anyways. I think the study found, and the dialogue has changed to acknowledge, that these are movable projects, and there are many states that they can look to go to. You know, some of the opponents of what we've tried to do have said that, you know, South Dakota's overall business climate gives the wind industry back what it might lose on its upfront financing. The committee found this summer in its report, and Senator Frerichs was on that committee, that the income taxes on the project that we don't pay because we don't have a corporate income tax in South Dakota save us about $2.2 million from North Dakota. Well, that $2.2 million, or $4.2 in Iowa, frankly, don't make up for the difference that we face up front. And again, as someone said earlier, the upfront costs are the problem because we aren't making a nickel yet. We aren't spinning any blades. We aren't receiving any income. So we need to finance those. And what the proposals that are out there do is they give us long-term planning ability, because we know to a dollar certain not based on a grant, but on a dollar certain, what we will have to pay for sales use and excise tax in the development of a plant. The grant and the refund programs are fine, but a lot of these projects, as developers will tell you, are projects that are developed over the course of 6 to 8 years. And when you have to go out and meet with investment bankers to raise the capital to put these plants in the ground, you need to know to the penny what you're going to pay. With that, I'll stand by for any questions. I would add that one other fact that the committee looked at is the tax benefit of these projects. I don't think that's been discussed enough up here. The committee found that over a 20-year span, a 200-megawatt wind farm will pay to South Dakota $32.5 million in production taxes and additional sales use and excise tax on improvements. Now, most of these plants will last a lot longer than 20 years, and so really the incentive to get these companies here will pay off for generations to come once the projects are located in South Dakota. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Brett Kennecke. I'm a lawyer from Pierre and a lobbyist for both Iberdrola Renewables, one of the largest wind companies operating in the world, and also the South Dakota Electric Utility Companies. And you heard from Steve Willard previously from that perspective. I was pleased to participate in last summer's study and agree with the conclusions that Mr. Van Camp told you about how out of step we are on taxes on wind projects in South Dakota. He's exactly right, and he's exactly right when he says that the iterations on this topic that are floating around the legislature would not bring us into complete parity with our neighbors, but would bring us a step closer and put us back at least where we were prior to 2010. I will give you an iteration or a discussion of the various facets of the program. I know some of you have recently entered the room. The discussions around this topic in the legislature have revolved around putting wind on a basis that there's a predictable per megawatt installed rebate program. It's easy to determine exactly what your tax policy would be on that, and that's one of the things my company craves, is a consistent tax policy that's broadly accepted going forward. The big stone portion of this would provide a half of the contractor's excise and sales tax rebated to those companies constructing those upgrades. Those upgrades are being required by the South Dakota DENR and the EPA in Washington. They're going to cost about $500 million. There won't be one additional megawatt of electricity generated as a result of those investments. It's not going to increase the sales of the Big Stone partners. It's going to simply increase the costs to the people who rely on those utilities for their electricity. That's Otter Tail, Montana, Dakota, and Northwestern. So those customers are going to have to pay the taxes that go to the state of South Dakota on that project. They're going to pay all of them. The tax benefit that we're up here advocating for doesn't flow back to the company. All of those costs are rate recoverable from rate payers. South Dakotans and neighbors in other states who also rely on those utilities are going to pay those taxes. In Northwestern's case, all of their customers from Big Stone are in South Dakota and are going to pay that portion of those taxes. It's not the companies getting that money back. It's going to be the ratepayers. It's South Dakotans and, in some cases, neighboring states as well. We'll acknowledge that. From the wind perspective, we need certainty and predictability going forward. As Mr. Van Camp said, this has been a contentious issue for several years in the legislature, and we need that predictability. We can't ask the legislature to change the wind regime in South Dakota. That's a function of the atmosphere. We can't ask you for help with a production tax credit in Washington. That's certainty we also crave. But we can ask you to take a look at the upfront taxes paid by these installations, and so that's why we're here. We need predictability going forward. I would tell you that my company did not support House Bill 1230. We think it works for some of the advocates that got up here previously to me. But for my company to come in and say, hey, we're planning a $400 million wind installation and we'd like $25 million out of that fund for our taxes back, is going to break the bank. It's a non-starter. We need a different plan and a different program, one that's predictable going forward. Speaking about predictability, I'm extremely concerned about the impact of House Bill 1230 being on the ballot this fall. I've been around long enough to know that the answer after an election from the legislature, from the people who will be sitting in your chairs next year, whether it's all of you or a combination, is, you know, the voters have spoken. We're not interested in picking that up. The voters said, no, we're not going to have a program in this state. If we remain significantly out of step on tax policy, and if the answer is the voters have spoken, then we're going to end up with no plan for some period of time before we can chip away back again at that. And in the meantime, we'll be losing wind installations to our neighboring states as we have been. So I would ask you for certainty, predictability, and finally broad acceptance of a policy going forward. I want broad public acceptance of some kind of policy that can take this issue away from the legislature for some period of time that we can look to as we plan 3- and 5-year projects. It takes a tremendous amount of time to work with landowners, with people who want to buy electricity, with suppliers, with financiers of large projects. And without predictability, those efforts are being impeded. So that's what I'm asking you for today. If I can answer any questions, I'll be glad to. Thank you for listening to me. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. Further proponents? Seeing no proponents, I guess we'd open it for opponents.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Ben Nesselhoff from Vermilion. I'm representing myself today. It's good to see all of you here. I'll be honest, I walked in here today because this is the only thing happening right now. I didn't anticipate that that I was going to be speaking on anything, much less House Bill 12, whatever. I want to speak not to the merits of this bill, but it seems that this somehow got wrapped up into 170 and 1230 from last year. And I want to just talk about process. My friends who are supporting this bill, and they are my friends, even I can tolerate Owen on most days, but they implied that somehow a compromise was reached, that all parties are satisfied. And as the person who spearheaded the petition drive, let me assure you that that simply is not true. Our concerns about 1230 are still very much concerns that we have with 170. I would ask you to merely trust the process. It wasn't the Democratic Party that brought this to a vote of the people. It was 23,000 plus South Dakotans of all political stripes. I have trouble going back to those folks and saying a bill that was altered slightly has somehow appeased all parties involved. It just hasn't. Now, if you believe, I think Julie Johnson did a very good job of laying out reasons, valid reasons, why you might be concerned about 1230 being on the ballot. And if you want to stand by those, by all means do. But please don't believe for a second that this is a reasonable compromise, because it's simply not. I would ask you to trust the voters. The same voters who were intelligent enough to vote for all of you, I think, can be trusted with making these sorts of decisions. That might be a little odd to say trust the voters, since out of the group of people in this room, I might be the only one, based on the last election, to say, bring into question the judgment of voters. But I think that we do need to do that. I think we need to respect the referendum process, which we are the state that started that. So I think it's very difficult to go back to your constituents and say, we just don't trust you to make this decision. Or if you want to be not entirely honest, to say a compromise was reached. Because, as again, the person whose name was on the petition to refer it. That's just simply not true.
Can I interrupt for a second, Mr. Nesselhoff? I'm as a chair of the committee, rather than us shooting in the dark about, and I know this is a rather unorthodox meeting, and we have, I think, last count, there were 4 different amendments that were pending on here.
I don't want to speak to any of them.
And nor do I want you to. But rather than shooting in the dark about something that might apply or might not, a conversation, would you be willing to stand down and allow the committee to have some discussion and
perhaps if they deem fit, move an amendment, and then I will I will open back up for comment from you, contingent upon the amendment that will be on the table at that
Mr.
time.
Mr. Chairman, that's unnecessary. I just wanted to say respect the process, and beyond that, the amendments doesn't really matter what the policy is.
Yeah. As you will.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. Further opponents? Any other opponents? Seeing none, questions? Mr. Willard, I was instructed from the prime that you would do any rebuttal if you felt led to do so.
Mr. Chairman, again, Steve Willard with Electric Utility Companies. I'll probably, if you're comfortable, I'll just stand by and post your conversation, and depending on what action or if there's particular questions that you have about any of the amendments, I'd sure answer them or have somebody else would. So I'll just remain here as a resource to serve at your disposal.
Fair enough. With that, then we will open to questions from the committee. Senator Frerichs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Julie Johnson, if I may, please. Julie, my question is, could you share, I realize we don't want to, you can't probably share the name of the projects that you referenced that are on hold at this point, but would you have any idea on roughly what the cost or size of those projects are?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the question, Senator. I'm aware of one that is in the $30 million range. Another one is in the $50 million range. Expansions with equipment get kind of pricey at those
Thank
levels.
You.
Yes.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. And Julie, could you share then also what would be out of that roughly $16 million in the pot? And of course, those numbers vary a little bit, but with, you know, should 1230 be the law of the land? And however, how much do you think of those 30 or 50? Let's just average them at $40 million. What would be their request for reduction in the amount of taxes or to get back?
Given the fact that, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, given the fact that referred Law 14 is on the ballot, I don't know that anyone has done those computations at this point in time. If they have, I do not know that.
Another follow-up, Mr. Chair, if I may. Julie, we saw, of course, in the example of Bell Brands where our governor promised to, I don't know, I've heard somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 million out of that fund if he gets things to proceed, at least somewhere to that effect. So obviously there's been discussion where they projected some things, and he put, the state in play on that, and that's a good deal. But they haven't even estimated what they would like to see for their funds?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I was not a party to that transaction, so I'm not an expert witness on that transaction, and I do not know what the state put on the table or the community put on the table in that project.
If I may, Mr. Chair, just clarification on your project, I use as an example, what would be, are they looking for $1 million? Are they looking for $2 million? Obviously, there would have to be some sort of target figure on a percentage of what the project is and then what you hope to get back on taxes paid.
Well, Mr. Chairman, my only way of answering that is to simply tell you all I know is that there are projects that have told us that once this is cleared up, the pendency of this on the ballot has put their business decisions on hold. We haven't gotten to the point of running the numbers or representing that they would get anything given the pendency of referred Law 14.
Further questions?
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Senator Frerichs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, ma'am, Mike.
Senator, that's a good question. And not knowing some of the particulars of the projects that you ask about, my expectation would be yes, in a sense that What we're really talking about with 1230 and what we're talking about today is the state incentives that are available on sales tax and contractors' excise tax. Those incentives are one part of the mosaic that comes along in these deals. The TIFs are done entirely with a local discretion. They're done with local action. They're done with local motion, public review, public meetings, public plans. So my expectation would be yes, but that's a little separate deal from this one. But at the same time, they complement each other.
At this point, members of the committee, I think I'll put a pause on the questions, and rather than us poke around in the dark on this, that open it up for we have several proposals for amendments on the table, and I would like to open it up for discussion specifically and maybe possibly a motion to move one of the amendments so we can narrow our discussion and our questions down. So with that, I'd open for discussions or movement on any one particular amendment of the stack that we have in front of us. Senator Gray? Thanks. Thanks for waving your hand and getting my attention like that.
May want to pass some of those out. Pages may want to help pass some of those out, too. Mr. Chairman, at this time, I would move 1228FG.
Second.
Motion to amend 1228FG. Comments on the motion, Senator Gray?
Well, Mr. Chairman, so only a couple weeks ago, one evening, I think I put the kids to bed, and I flipped on the TV, and what was on? Groundhog's Day. Doesn't it feel like that? That's what this feels like. Every year, I mean, for several years, we've talked about incentives, and 2 years in particular, we were right here at the end. In fact, it was a conference committee from the Senate. It was Senator Knutson, Senator Heiderprem, and I, and we carved out a deal, and then we carved out a deal for wind in that conference committee. Last year, we came back with a different plan. Well, I bring this amendment, and this amendment would essentially include wind and would include the Big Stone project, the environmental upgrade. And what I'm getting at is this, is certainty for those super large projects. Now, I know there's people that'll disagree with me because maybe they'll say these are big corporations, but you know what? A few percent of nothing is still nothing. And if we're not getting these big projects, these wind projects in South Dakota, we're getting ultimately nothing. And right now, I think over time, they do kick in a lot of tax dollars once they're up and going. They provide benefit to landowners, to local governments. Certainly there's some challenges that come with them too. We heard about roads earlier in the session, but I think the benefits outweigh the costs when it comes to wind. Now, I know this amendment does not cover our smaller projects, and obviously there's still time we can discuss those in this committee or down the road in a conference committee. But really, my belief is that smaller projects probably are more ably handled through the Futures Fund and through 1230 as adopted last year, should that become the law of the land. So with that, I'll stand down. I would just ask for your support of 1228FG.
Well, we had a motion to amend by Gray. Was there a second?
Yes.
We had the second. Second by Senator Johnson. Further comments on the motion to amend?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Frerichs.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And first off, thanks to Senator Gray. I know both of us have expressed our agreement that let's take care of these bigger projects. And I hope, you know, you folks remember, of course, my comments when we dealt with that 170 when it first started here. You know, we could have had, you know, this type of legislation. So this addresses those very large projects and still leaves that 1230 discussion for either, obviously, the voters to decide or, and of course, the governor to determine on how he wants to do things there, whether or not that's the correct program that they want to do. And I think we need to be respectful of the voters, but I see this operating outside of the 1230 discussion, and I think there's good agreement to take care of both of these issues, which are significant investments. And it uses the typical way of thinking of, these companies' tax dollars are in our state coffers first, to my knowledge, and then there might be dollars kicked back, not like in 1230 where there's a true appropriation for those dollars, and they're most likely earmarked and then sent back as rebates later.
Any other discussion? And I will allow questions, too, from the committee on this amendment if you have any questions. I would also, as long as we're departing from regular standard course, if there are folks in the audience that would like to offer comment on the amendment now that we have it narrowed down to this amendment. Anybody want to make specific comments, either pro or con, on 1228FG?
Mr. Chairman, just briefly, and I appreciate the process here, Steve Willard with the Electric Utility Company, specific to the Big Stone portion of that. Big Stone, when Big Stone 2 fell apart, essentially, with Minnesota and the EPA intervention, the Otter Tail and Montana Dakota Utilities and Northwestern owners, Otter Tail's got 50%, the other two share 25% of the Big Stone plant, took a step backward. They're essentially compelled by the EPA to go forward with this project. Those projects, you know, of course it's a moving number and it's a big project, but they are in asking for advanced determination of prudence of $489 million in North Dakota and Minnesota. So what that means is that's essentially the top cost. Beyond that, they don't get rate recovery. So the expectation is that's a ceiling, not a floor, but it'll somewhere fall around that number. We've sat down and talked a lot about that, the impact of that in South Dakota. Let me be very specific as to what that means. Is if you just round that to $500 million, because I can do that math, what it means is that if everything is subject to sales and CE tax, that you're talking about $30 million. So we'll assume that all of it's not, but so that'd be a top end. So 15% of that money back is $15 million. Now, I want to be clear that that's money that does not go to the investors, and that's money that does not go to the companies. By statute, in South Dakota, taxes are paid by the ratepayers. So essentially what that language does and says to the EPA and says to the public that, look, we will not be the beneficiary of a tax windfall because the EPA is compelling us to make an upgrade. And that, rather, the $15 million that we're saving is money that won't go onto the back of those ratepayers. So this is right to the ratepayers' pockets. We feel pretty strongly about this particular portion of the amendment. And, frankly, this particular portion of it has survived in every different manifestation of conversations we've had on both in the House and Senate side. So I can sure answer questions if you've got them, but this one's right for the ratepayers, so we sure appreciate the consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Willard. Any other comments?
Mr. Chairman, Tony Van Hessen with the Governor's Office. I wandered into here on a completely different matter looking for one of your members and happened to hear the tail end of this discussion. And so I just wanted to let you know that this is an amendment that we were not aware was being offered. We have not had the opportunity to analyze it either through GOED or probably more importantly with the Department of Revenue as to what effect this would have on projected revenues or the manner in which it would be administered. Certainly you are all capable of making your own judgments about the merits of the amendment, but I wanted you to know that to the degree that there are questions about the numbers or about the administration, we were not aware of this amendment and not yet prepared to answer those questions.
Fair enough. Any questions from the committee? Comments, questions on the motion to amend 1228FG?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a little confusing on how exactly to proceed on amendments and with the irregularity of how we've tried to fix this. I think that we've all tried to work towards the same goal on this, and that's to create a tax climate in South Dakota that makes it more favorable for businesses to want to do business here and want to expand their businesses here. We've also been challenged to respect the process, and that confuses me a little bit because I think that people are leaving out a step of the process, and to do the will of the voters. When we passed 1230, I think that was passed by people that were elected by South Dakotans to represent them in the legislature. We passed a bill as a legislature that said, we give you our full faith and trust to do what's right for South Dakota. And we passed that bill. And so part of that process is exactly what happened, the referral process. And God bless South Dakota for having the foresight to allow such a procedure to take place. But another part of the process is that we have an intervening legislative year to fix problems. And to, before that has to go to the ballot, before we have to put that issue back in front of the voters, we give ourselves, by again, legislative enactment, the ability to have an intervening year to talk about those problems and try to fix those. Part of the process, on February 13th, my good friend from Wilmont took his own bill out of the graveyard and put it back into discussion because we had the conversation that we may be able to have bipartisan support for fixing a problem. And now that bill, if depending on who's on first and what's on second, is making a mockery out of the entire system by saying that it's a Republican-driven initiative to pull 1230. Not at all. It was my intention and my support that said that if we can fix this with bipartisan support, and believe me, there was bipartisan support for having that conversation to move that forward. If there would have been bipartisan support, absolutely I would have supported that. And here we are again today. We're back to now, how will this get spun? Is this another maneuver to, again, have this Republican-dominated legislature poke a finger in the 23,000 good people that signed a petition? I don't think so. That's not my intent. I don't want to see this become a political football again. It has been since the beginning, and it seems like it continues to do so. We had the opportunity with Big Stone 2 to fix the issues that we're now trying to come back in and address. Because of environmentalists and regulators from another state, one of South Dakota's largest economic development projects in the history of our state got canceled. And so now we're trying to do something more for them. We're back trying to do more for wind. quite frankly, I think that these are big picture issues that we, again, have to have a bipartisan conversation in. And I'm not willing at this time to support amendments to the current version of the bill until we have that opportunity. Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Senator Frakes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First off, I thank the good senator from Wentworth for his comments. And I think, let's just remember, we go back to the 170 discussion. And at that point, there definitely was very good discussion between, I think, all parties involved, whether it's governor's office, Republicans, Democrats, and the industry folks, on what could be done as some possibilities for a new program on the 1230 type of stuff. But in discussion amongst both sides, the end result that was pushed forth from industry was still the old program, just scaling from 22 down to 18% on using general fund dollars. And that's something where, when it comes down to the voters, that's that's been my intention, that the voters should be able to decide, because it's one of the first times in many years that we, you know, divert out of the general fund instead of focusing on education and Medicaid issues. So I just want to make that clear. And I'm glad that, you know, when we brought 170 up, it was my intent, as I expressed then, and I still stay consistent today, to say we need to take care of the environmental and the wind. Transmission was also talked about there. That's kind of been pushed off. And I don't think that we have veered there, and that's where this amendment keeps that debate focused. Where I'm hesitant, and I probably could associate some of my remarks with the senator from Wentworth, that what's disturbing in this is how the process is unfolding. And I'm leery of what might happen in a conference committee on the last day out here in Pierre, and all of a sudden something might go down that in the end nobody is happy with, and it doesn't give that true respect to the voters. I just will close with, and I know, Mr. Chair, we're trying to move on here, but of course this might warrant even more discussion. I'm sure when many of you left home this weekend, you had discussions about what's going to happen this last week. Well, what I told, especially my buddies, but I told people at Cracker Barrels, I said, watch out, because the legislature is in session this last week, and I think, you know, we owe it to everyone to be respectful of the process, and I sense that from the good senator from Wentworth, that we want to make sure and keep this topic in full discussion, but be respectful. Thank you.
Further comments on the motion to amend? Seeing no further comments on the motion to amend, with 1228 FG, all those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion carries. House Bill 1228 is so amended. Further comments and or action? Senator Gray.
I move to pass as amended.
Second. Motion to pass by Senator Gray as amended, seconded by Senator Rave. Comments on the motion? Senator Gray.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you know, I go back to my original comments. I too don't like the fact that we do this at the end every time. I'm tired of it. Guess this is my last chance to do it. But the reality is, we had a wind task force last summer, and we talked about this time and time again, and so far, together, we haven't gotten it. We get it and we don't get it. We got it 3 years ago, I think, when we did something for wind and for large projects to give them certainty. And so I think what this bill does is give them certainty beyond the end of this year anyways. The end of this year, the following year, I don't recall. But we need to give them some certainty if we want them to locate here. And so with that, I just ask for your support.
Further comments? Senator Frerichs.
Mr. Chair, I have a technical question, more so for our staff, if I may, just so we understand the legislation. I had asked Mr. Ortbon earlier, and then he said once we kind of see the amendment, we'll determine. But my question is, does this, as amended, this legislation, does it have any effect or impact on House Bill 1230, which was passed and signed by the governor last year?
Well, I can tell you the opinion of the chair is that it does not.
I respect that. I just want to make sure.
And I would open a comment if somebody else had an idea otherwise.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I've been trying to. I pulled up 1230 from last year, and I've been trying to compare sections. But obviously, that's why we have some legal minds that understand a little better. But to my knowledge, I don't see where it would, and I've asked the question numerous times to people, and nobody has told me that it will. I just wanted to confirm that, more so in public here especially.
Thank you. Further comments on the due pass motion as amended? Well, I'll make a couple closing comments, and I probably shouldn't, because I really don't know what to make of this whole process, to be honest. And I think that Senator Russell Olson made some very valid points. It really feels like an ugly situation we have on our hands, because we've tried real hard to address, and we worked long and hard to come up with 1230 to address specific areas. And I think the comments that Mr. Kaneki made are spot on and paint somewhat of a dreary picture of what may lie ahead, depending on what happens with 1230. Because then, if that measure passes, we will have poisoned the well for resolving any of these issues for some time to come. And so I don't have a clear idea of whether this is the right direction or not. From my perspective, at least we allow the conversation to move forward at the 11th hour once again, and I'm not at all comfortable with that, but at least we're doing something. And so, as unhelpful as those comments are, at least I've got it off my chest. Any other comments? Seeing none, the motion then is due pass as amended. House Bill 1228, all those in favor will vote aye, those opposed nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Adelstein?
Aye.
Cutler?
Aye.
Frerichs?
Aye.
Gray?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Rave?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Olson?
Nope.
Roden?
Aye. Motion carries. House Bill 1228 goes to the floor. Due pass as amended.
Do you have to do this too?
And we have a title amendment, FTG. Moved by Gray, seconded by Johnson. Comments on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Title is so amended. That leaves, ladies and gentlemen, only one topic, and that is summer study issues. Gina sent out a reminder that we would take that discussion up at the tail end of this meeting. I've not heard a lot of input from members as far as any burning issues, but I did want to take the opportunity at this point to open the committee up for discussion. Does anybody have any issues they want to recommend for summer study coming from State Affairs? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, we've had several different resolutions. We've had Senate Bill 169 now that I think forms a task force to study drainage issues in South Dakota. And I think it's very arguable to say that marquee or spotlight issues often get placed in State Affairs because we are the committee that makes the big decisions, whether they're the ones where we get to score the touchdown or whether we're the ones that have to give the bad news to somebody that their dog is being put to sleep. And so I think that this is a big issue. I think that it's an issue that affects the economy at every level of government in South Dakota, townships, counties, and our state government are through our roads, the loss of cropland, the private property issues that are also challenged with drainage and flooding issues. And so it would be my hope that this committee could support that summer study to look into drainage issues in South Dakota.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Any other comments on that that issue specifically? Senator Frerichs.
I just have a question for Senator Olson. Is this would you prefer to have a Michigan, should 169 continue to pass, which it appears to have support, but who knows what will happen in the House? Anything can happen when it gets to the House floor. But would you like to see a separate summer study as opposed to an ongoing task force, which is going to take, I think, 3 years or something like that?
Mr. Chair, you know, that's just it. We don't know what's going to happen to bills. And, I mean, stranger things have happened. I've seen bills that came out of the House with 100% approval get throttled over here. And I've also seen bills that we've supported in the Senate get over to the House and for no apparent reason die. And so it's my intent to, again, this is an important issue to South Dakota, is to make sure that something is alive and well to study this very important issue.
I mean, Mr. Chair, then thank you, and thanks to Senator Olson. I think that's, makes very good sense, and I can understand where you're coming from. I would hope, though, maybe when we consider this, that instead of just referring to as drainage, that you know, we truly look at water management or from a basin perspective or something that's a little more open, but yet obviously gives the intent that we're going to be looking at drainage of all sorts, clean out, maintenance, and things like that.
Further comments? And I would assume that's a motion that we recommend that as a summer study? Yes. Motion by Olson. Second?
Second.
Second by Cutler. Any other comments on that motion?
Sure.
Senator Gray.
Well, let's just round it off. Why don't we have a bill, a resolution, and now a committee endorsement? Finally, something I can vote for.
Who was that famous author that liked to cover his tracks? It was the best of time, that was the worst of time. Any other comments?
Could you restate it, please? I'm not sure how it's going to sound.
Pardon me?
Could we restate what the motion is?
Care to take a stab at the...
I guess I would just... I didn't have... I apologize because of other outside interests. I didn't realize that we were going to discuss that today. I would just ask the LRC staff to align my motion with the language that was in the resolution that I had passed both houses so far this year. And quite frankly, Senator, I mean, if we want to study the management aspect of it, I'm not trying to minimize. I think that this is a big enough picture deal. I want to get proponents and opponents at the table, and I want to get experts on drainage, and I want to get, you know, wildlife activists and everyone at the table for this. So I'm not trying to pigeonhole or to say that the task force doesn't have merit. I just want to make sure that this is an issue that gets studied this year in South Dakota.
Chair.
And I completely agree, Senator Olson. I think it's spot on, and I hope that aligns with what a lot of us have all agreed, that let's bring all parties to the table and look at what needs to be either changed or updated or at least addressed in terms of water management in our flooded land. So thank you.
Further comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Anything else?
Move adjourned.
I'll belay that motion. Any other discussion as far as summer study subjects? Okay. The motion then is the motion to adjourn from Senator Adelstein. Is there a second?
Second
by Rave. Comments on that motion? Seeing none. Before I ring the gavel, thank you. I believe this will be the last meeting of this session for the Senate State Affairs, so thank you for your participation. And if there are no other comments, meeting is adjourned.